Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Here we are in sweltering London, kicking back in front of our desk fans in our moo-moos, trying to do our jobs as hell itself opens up on the Central Line and all the pubs run out of cider. Yes, it's summer in England like it is every year, but to be honest, how the fuck did we ever wear jumpers? Joining me in this merciful air-conditioned glass box are Tamlin McGee, Charlotte G, and Davey P, ready to cool you down with a 40-minute freeze-pop of tech. We'll be talking dark stuff first before brightening up a bit with some light-hearted stock price crashing and expensive laptops overheating yarns. Ice to meet you. Okay, but banter aside, Tamlin, you have a rather heavy subject for us this Friday morning. So listener, bear with us. We do have some lighter topics coming up, but it's an important one and an interesting story that Tamlin wrote for techworld.com. So Tamlin, I'm just going to pass over to you to unpack a complex subject.
I guess, first of all, what's been in the news a lot is workers in Silicon Valley protesting their companies collaborating with ICE, which is the Trump's Gestapo, essentially, rounding up immigrant families. And
Yeah.
Amazon workers compared it to IBM collaborating with the Nazis during the Holocaust. So I thought it would be interesting to speak with the author of a book called IBM and the Holocaust, a guy called Edwin Black, who's an investigative journalist and an author, and get his perspective on the topic.
Yep.
And it's pretty bleak.
Is there any, like, what was your headline? Do you remember what the story
went
with?
The headline was "A Warning from the Past, IBM, the Holocaust, ICE and Silicon Valley." And the reason I thought it was really apt to revisit it is because we're kind of leaving leaving uncharted waters to the good faith of companies and their ethics departments, that they'll develop these technologies, but we have absolutely no oversight into what they're doing and why. And I think, well, IBM did basically enable the Holocaust to happen really efficiently with the use of automation technology, which was pretty much brand new at the time. So they weren't... The engineers there were so... The statisticians and engineers were so excited about the fact that they could do these things, they didn't stop to think, are we abetting crimes against humanity?
Right.
Yeah. Small consideration, you would have thought, but... Yeah, so people basically... Perhaps there's a bit of an issue around people focusing on the process rather than the outcome and just thinking, like, we're working on this thing, but not thinking, what is the end that this is going to be used to achieve?
Right. I think there's a real problem with technocrats and technocracy now, even with the so-called progressive strands in America. We're listening to billionaires or millionaires like Satya Nadella of Microsoft or the Google CEO, who just promise that they're going to use AI for ethical reasons, but actually... In their actions, they're being tightly integrated with Trump's Gestapo or Amazon's working with the CIA, and there's all these facial recognition programs, and it's like, how much do we trust them, really? Well, I guess it'd be useful to actually talk about what IBM did.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Sorry, yes, no. The floor is yours.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a bit complicated, so bear with me. I'll try and get it right. At the turn of the 20th century, there was a German-born inventor called Hermann Hollerith, and he invented tabulating machines that would use punch cards to automate, to give you answers that would require a lot of paper pushing, usually.
Yeah.
So the history is, he licensed his patents to a guy called Willy Heidinger in Germany, who created a company called Dehomag. My German's bad, but I'll try. Deutsche Hollerith Maschinen Gesellschaft, I think. Now, over in America, a guy called Thomas Watson, who'd later be the CEO of IBM, was a traveling salesman. Eventually, he became really good at sales, got prosecuted for new antitrust laws, then wrangled out of that, and eventually was appointed CEO of a company called the Computing Tabulating Recording Company, CTR. Now, CTR was an amalgamation of five different companies,
yeah.
And Dehomag was the most dominant one. It was the one that had the most promise. So CTR managed to get a majority stake in Dehomag, 90%, and then Thomas Watson renamed CTR IBM.
Okay.
So now you've got IBM in America and their German subsidiary, wholly owned by IBM, Dehomag.
No, that's useful because that at least explains like how IBM came to be involved. Yeah.
So the Holarith machines had previously been used in like census recordings, so they were proven to be efficient in counting people. Now, obviously, what the Nazis did was count people, but with the purpose of subjugating and subdividing the population and oppressing people.
Yeah.
And Dehomag, the tabulating machines, made that extremely efficient. And the Nazis relied on IBM all the way through, especially the Third Reich's first years. And eventually, it wasn't just the original census taking, but it would help with making the trains run on time. But of course, these trains would be going to and from prison camps,
yeah.
Or death camps.
It wasn't just the Holocaust. So, as in, like, they were involved from the start around collecting data on the population.
People, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because obviously, one of the biggest reasons why they were able to execute the Holocaust with such sort of horrific efficiency was because they had such good data and such good demographic data.
Right. And something you hear, a technology buzzword you hear all the time now is running things at scale. This was the first time that they counted people at scale.
Yeah.
Right, and they used it ultimately to this end.
Yeah. What does IBM say about that now, today? Do they? Well, I mean, they have to admit they did it, but do they sort of express any contrition for their role?
There's been no admittance at all. I'm just looking for IBM's statement that their press guy sent me while he was on holiday, because obviously he did want to reply to the story.
Yeah.
But it was something along the lines of IBM has never been silent on this issue. But Edwin Black says he believes, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but my understanding is there needs to be some accountability and ownership of this from IBM, because they did enable all this to happen.
Yeah.
You know? And he also points out at the beginning of his book that the Holocaust and the murdering of people could or would have happened without IBM, but what these machines did was they made it a lot more efficient using automation, which is what we hear about a lot now as well.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Because obviously in the article you talk about it being a bit of a warning from the past. And obviously I can see sort of links to enabling, making it easier for ICE to operate in the US. What else do you sort of think we can learn from this episode? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. It feels like we're living dystopia to a degree at the moment. He said to me that he feels that we're sliding down the mountain, grasping at trees and edges, but falling down the mountain at great speed. Because if something's not done to hold these emerging technologies to account, there's no concrete defenses against something like this happening again. Mm. And I guess you're seeing glimpses of that with like American companies aiding ICE in America.
Yeah.
How would that, because there's been a lot of talk around people saying that tech companies need to be regulated. So I guess that would look at kind of, but how, I wonder how the government could go around doing that. It's difficult to know who is responsible for this oversight and how do you then implement it in practice.
Also, it seems like oversight doesn't really matter to a lot of these companies. Like Uber, for instance, has been breaking laws and ignoring regulations wherever it operated because it can afford to take the hit.
Mm.
It'll just push and push and push. And if it gets frozen out of a market, then it can go to other markets.
Mm. Yeah.
Or agree to those regulations. Yeah. But there's not been much sign of that happening.
Yeah. Well, this is part of the problem that in a way, and I mean, it's a different case. But I mean, for example, there was a strike there was an attempt at forming a trade union in BuzzFeed this week. And they basically said, we don't want to push it too far, because if we did, they'd just say, right, well, we're going to just move everything to India. So in a way, these companies are so globalized and so powerful that even individual governments are actually don't seem that powerful in the face of someone like, you know, Google or Facebook or Microsoft.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess once globalization was fully solidified, like late 90s, early 2000s, yeah, if you strike at a plant, they'll just move production elsewhere. Mm,
mm.
But I mean, there are signs that that is something that could be tackled. Last week during Prime Day, Amazon warehouse workers across Europe went on a strike together. Mm. I was talking to someone from an organization called Make Amazon Pay, who said that if we tie these struggles to wider social movements and the left, I guess, then maybe it would have a bit more teeth, because there are all these bottlenecks and choke points that these companies have to... that these companies rely on, regardless of where they move production, they're always going to need logistics, and you can't automate that completely.
Mm.
So it's not like we're completely powerless, but it feels like, in my opinion, there needs to be like mass action and mass awareness of these sort of issues before any change could happen or anything with teeth to rein these companies in.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's also with like Project Maven and looking at companies that are working in the Department of Defense.
Yeah,
because actually, interestingly, quite a lot of the pushback from that has come from employees at the companies themselves. So maybe there's some faith we can take in the fact that the people working for there are actually saying, we don't want you to do this.
I guess, but like, I don't know. Definitely. But to the same point, like in response to that, these companies that were involved with ICE, or there are concerns about them developing AI, they're just promising us, I know it'll be ethical, but how do we know that? How can we take them on good faith when there's no transparency?
Yeah, there's a weird thing that's different between these two situations as well. In like the 30s, your average person in America or Germany probably didn't have anything to do with IBM.
Mm.
Whereas nowadays, all the companies who we're sort of worried about doing the same sort of thing to do with automation are companies that actually, even though they get a bit of a bad rep in the tech press, most people trust.
Mm.
I mean, I don't think any fewer people are using Facebook after Cambridge Analytica.
Mm.
And there's this weird acceptance.
I don't think they are.
No, they aren't.
I think they've had a backlash.
User growth hasn't dropped to Facebook. Yeah. It's slowed down, but they still increased their number of users by 11%.
Yeah.
So they're still growing.
To them, like, for,
sort of frightening, isn't it?
It's weird that these are companies that everyone is aware of, and services, they're integrated into like the consumer's life.
Yeah.
Mm. In a way that IBM weren't. Now it's kind of conversely, even though we're more aware of them, it means we trust them more.
Yeah.
Or not we, but
yeah,
the wider we.
It's a bit like, it's interesting you said integrated, because it made me think of like how finance has been integrated into absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And every aspect of our careers and lives, like pensions, housing, whatever, it's all like tied to investment funds and casino gambling by various city bankers, etc. Technology is kind of similar in that it's so pervasive into our lives now. It's like, is it too late? Because we've already trusted all this data over to them. Because I think there is a growing awareness, even if the user count hasn't dropped, that awareness about data generally.
Yeah.
But
no, I know what you mean.
Like we've already given it to them.
That's the thing. I see some of these like articles that come out, and they're a little bit self-righteous. I kind of see what they're trying to do, but it's just like, I didn't use Facebook or Google services for a week, what happened. I was like, yeah, fine, but like, it was really difficult for you to do that in your modern workflow.
It's not tenable to just say, don't use these things. Yeah.
It just isn't.
I mean, my solution obviously is to nationalise Facebook, Twitter, Amazon,
and Spoons.
And Wetherspoons, obviously.
You probably have a lot of our data as well, really.
Yeah.
Different scale, but...
Yeah.
You know, I went to a Spoons a couple of months ago, and the bar staff were wearing body-worn cameras. I thought that was really weird.
Well, that is weird.
Yeah.
Oh, God, they're everywhere. Yeah, I was kind of hoping that we'd reach some sort of like conclusion to this, but it's actually one of those topics that's so huge and brings in so many different issues that it's just, here are some things to be worried about, basically.
I mean, I feel like I've barely even touched on the actual IBM Nazi story, and we're probably running out of time.
People should read it on techworld.com.
Yes,
I hope they do, yeah.
Is there a sense that
employees at IBM at the time were conscious of their responsibility, that they had issues with it morally, like Charlotte was talking about, whistleblowers from within the company or things like that?
So Edwin Black, not just him, but many, many researchers who've been working with him for free and in good faith because it's a topic of such importance, have combed through extensive records, and he told me that there was not a single protest from anyone in IBM at all.
Wow.
And it's not just IBM. Like, in World War II, there have been books written about collaborators with Nazi Germany. I mean, Ford lobbied the US Air Force not to bomb its factories in Nazi Germany, and they complied. So there'd be bombing raids over Nazi Germany, and they wouldn't bomb the Ford factories that were making the equipment for the Nazis.
Mm. Wasn't Ford quite pally with Hitler in some capacity?
I mean, Thomas Watson of IBM praised Mussolini early on and got a medal personally from
Ford.
From,
I mean, Ford was definitely a Hitler sympathiser.
He was known for his anti-Semitic view.
I have a feeling. I don't know. My dad used to work at Ford, and I remember him talking about that. But I don't know if it went beyond just liking him.
I mean, a lot of these business people did like fascism because they were scared of socialism and communism, and they thought it was a bulwark against it.
Yeah.
And praised them. Like, Thomas Watson himself wasn't an ideological fascist, but he did spot an opportunity to make a lot of money, and they did through Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
I mean, after the war, or even during the war, people from IBM employees would be embedded with the army, and they'd go into factories where these tabulating machines were and recover them. The scale of it's just astonishing, really.
Yeah.
It's an uncomfortable thought, though, isn't it, when you have to start confronting what companies would do, what we would do if we were living under or associated with a regime that was doing things like that.
And also, but I think it's not even just the regime, it's the start. The thing that sort of scares me is that IBM got into this when it actually probably seemed maybe not innocuous, but they were collecting data about the population. And the scary thing is it shows how easily you can go from something that seems fairly routine to something incredibly sinister, and without that being prevented in some way. It's the slippery slope. That's what scares me most about this story.
Like you said, David, I don't know, I've given a lot of thought, and I think a lot of my friends, a lot of people have, like, what would you do if fascism was on the rise? And we'd all like to think that we'd be, like, brave people who'd go out and do everything in our power we could to stop it. But actually, I'm not sure that that's the case. But, I mean, at least people are protesting, I guess.
With whimsical signs.
Yeah.
Food for thought. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm going to go off and cry now.
No.
Yeah, stick with us, listener. We'll lighten the tone slightly with a billionaire egotistical maniac.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What the Zuck has happened now?
Okay, well, I mean, a lot of people may feel saddened to hear that Mark Zuckerberg's personal value took a hit of $16 billion this week.
Boom.
Basically, Facebook announced its second quarter earnings, and immediately after that happened, its share price, its stock price, dropped by 20%, which is, I believe, the biggest ever drop in a single day that a company has ever experienced, ever. So it's huge, and it has wiped $118 billion off the value of Facebook's,
Important to note that they haven't technically lost that much money.
No, but it's just the value has dropped. The theoretical value of Facebook is now significantly
less. If we wanted to, you know, have a whip round and buy it.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's a good thought. So basically, a lot of people have kind of been questioning why this happened. It's quite weird because if you actually look at the kind of revenue growth, like they still experienced revenue growth, the user growth still increased as well.
Yeah.
But it just increased more slowly than it ever has before. So people are basically now reaching the point where they're saying, right, there is actually a limit to Facebook's growth.
Limit to the number of people on planet Earth.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But also, so it's a bit of a funny one. People are making this out like it's really bad for Facebook. And okay, I understand that theoretically 20% sounds like a huge drop.
Yeah.
But actually, it's just that it's not like they're even going to stop growing. It's just that they're going to not grow quite as quickly as they were before. So actually, I'm a bit kind of, you know, I wouldn't read quite as much into it as some people are. I think it was inevitable that Facebook at some point was going to start growing more slowly. They haven't even reached the limit of how many people are signing up. It's essentially the reason that people are now betting that they're worth less is that their revenue is going to expand more slowly. And the reason it's going to expand more slowly is because their costs are going up.
Right.
And their costs are going up for a number of reasons. GDPR is one of the reasons. Not necessarily a huge one. They're also under pressure to really beef up their privacy and their security measures. So they're basically going to have to spend some money. So yeah, that's some really deep analysis for you all.
Well, so is it to say that this drop is the result of recent and quite numerous scandals that Facebook's been involved in? If we think back, not just Cambridge Analytica and everything that happened this year, but past years, like with the news feed and sort of supposedly suppressing conservative views to certain people and meddling in elections and what have you. Is this just generally coming to a head and they've lost a bit of value? But what you're saying is that really it's still fine.
I mean, yeah, I certainly don't think it's kind of important to get this into perspective because Facebook is so huge and worth so much money that people, you can't really treat it like you would most companies in a way. I think that there's a number of reasons. I think it's very easy to sort of draw a direct link between some of these scandals and the share price dropping. I don't think there is one, there isn't really you can't point to a reason why it's happened. But certainly, Facebook has had a pretty torrid year. You know, I think trust in the platform has gone down hugely. I mean, people might have seen there's a big advertising campaign going around that basically says like fake news is not our friend, and
I've seen it on bus stops and stuff.
It is pretty weird actually. Yeah. And it's also really badly worded and wishy-washy, but anyway.
Oh, I think I actually heard an audio of like a thing they'd done, right?
Yeah,
they've done a new campaign.
Yeah, they're on a big PR push now to try and make people like them more.
Yeah, and it's kind of like trying to, there's this sort of music playing and there's an American guy with like a lilting voice talking about how if we all just came together a bit more, the world
is one of the big, like, that is the biggest message that Facebook tries to use.
That's like the worst thing that Facebook is at.
It's quite long as well.
It is, actually.
It's saying like, we know we did bad, but if you just like upload a few more photos, like,
then it'll be fine. Yeah. I mean, they the core message that they always try to put out regardless of, I mean, in every interview, so someone on the technical team did an interview with Facebook's chief diversity officer last week, and even they are using it even though it's not relevant to the conversation. They'll go on about how Facebook's connecting people, and that is their big talking point, and that's the thing that they always like to say. It's something that Zuckerberg, when he was giving testimony to the during the congressional hearings, is something that he kept on saying despite the overwhelming weight of evidence that suggests they are in fact not particularly doing that. I mean, they are doing it to an extent, but they're also doing a lot of other things that are very problematic.
Remember when they conducted psychological experiments on users secretly to see if they could alter their moods by showing them like things that would make them happy or sad?
Yeah.
Can you believe they did that in secret? And they're saying, we're connecting people and it's all happy. No, you're conducting psychological experiments with people without their consent.
I know. Like, it is absolutely horrible. I mean, imagine if you tried to run that as a... That would never get past any kind of, like, ethics committee. I mean, it's just so inappropriate.
It's so mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It shows you, like, what we were talking about in the last segment, that these companies are just so big that no one's really policing them.
Yeah.
And it's always like, I'll just do something naughty and then say sorry afterwards.
Mm. Yeah.
Not to bring it completely back around to the Holocaust, but to rep another podcast, Kara Swisher interviewed Mark Zuckerberg for Recode. And he made a clangor in that, which didn't get as much mainstream press as I thought it would. It did get a few headlines where he was... as a Jewish man himself, I thought it was strange that he voluntarily brought up Holocaust denial as something which he wouldn't suppress on his platform, because he was basically saying that they're just like misled and that they don't actually believe it. He was kind of sort of saying that, and he used that as the example of why they wouldn't stop sort of alt-right propaganda and fake news on, well, not necessarily fake news on their platform, but things that are sort of objectively wrong. That he wouldn't suppress it because he said it was sort of against free speech.
It was like Twitter refusing to kick off Nazis until eventually they did. But for the longest time, they'd ban users for really like minor offences.
Yeah.
Swearing at Ben
Affleck.
But Nazis actually organising on the platform to, you know, plan hate rallies. Oh, it's fine. It's just free speech.
Yeah. I mean, all of the platforms have really come unstuck on this issue.
I think this might have a lot to do with share price dropping slightly, surely.
I mean...
Because if investors are he won't suppress obvious racists.
It's not... I don't think it's so much
maybe
that...
Maybe suppression is the wrong word.
It's not so much that. It's more that, Facebook might actually have to spend some money employing people to think about this and to worry about it. So it's more about the costs that are associated with doing that.
Do you think maybe also it's because they have a CEO who is quite public and regularly puts his foot in it? Whereas someone like Google, we know they're not doing great things behind the scenes, but Sundar Pichai kind of keeps quiet. He crops up every now and then, tells you how great the Pixel phone is.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think Zuckerberg... I mean, he actually...
He's not a good interviewer.
No, he's not good. But he's actually quite private. I mean, I don't think he likes... in fact, to be honest, I don't really know why he did it. Don't think he especially likes or finds it comfortable being interviewed, but I think that he's been kind of forced to.
But they have no other recognisable personality they can put in front of anyone.
Yeah.
But he is also a stack of grey aliens in a zip-up suit. Pretending to be a human.
Yeah, I mean, he
in a North Face pullover.
He is not someone that... I mean, obviously... I know that I don't want to be mean to Mark Zuckerberg. He's not someone that you can remotely warm to. And I think no matter how you look at it, Facebook is very much something that he created. It's his thing. You know,
I think that's the problem.
He didn't take over after someone else,
including that one they did last week. He would not. He still has to mention that it's not something that I run from my dorm anymore. And it's like he's seen The Social Network and not really liked it, but being like, I'm fucking badass.
Yeah, I know.
It's really annoying. And
It's
strange that it won't grow beyond his idea and like his leadership, in that he sort of thinks that by blanket saying, no, it's a free speech platform, that actually he can wash his hands of any responsibility whatsoever.
Yeah, but then they all these companies flip flop on this all the time though, because they've banned Alex Jones from InfoWars from Facebook
for 30 days.
So they are doing something. So I'm sorry, but you can't have a position where you just say this is free speech. You have to ultimately take a view. You just have to. I understand that they don't want to censor things, and I do get that to an extent, but they do that. Like, you can't put pictures of yourself breastfeeding sometimes on Facebook. So they are taking a view. They can't pretend that they're not. They can't just go, we're not picking sides.
I think the million dollar question for me here is like, at what point? How does a company like Facebook reach consensus on what to censor and what not to censor? Mm. Because unlike, what's the amendment in America, the free speech one?
One of the amendments.
The second?
I don't know.
The right to stay silent.
Pleading the fifth.
Second amendment is guns.
First is guns.
Yeah.
Because that's the most important, so they put it first.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not. Right? To be honest, I know what the amendments are, but I don't know what number they're... One of the early ones.
Anyway, like, arguably, unlike papers, which do have that right in the media to free speech and are protected, companies don't. Like, it's all it's all up to them and what they decide should or shouldn't be published. And I agree that, like, this hateful, like, far-right stuff that's actually inciting people to violence should be suppressed or at least, like, socially ostracized or pushed away because it's, like, ultimately harmful. But what if they overstep the mark? What if you get an even more corporatized view of what you should and shouldn't read? Like, it's like Google News, right? They'll have to start weighing publications against each other.
Yeah. It's a genuine, really difficult challenge. Like, anyone who kind of weighs in on this and is like, oh, well, they should just do this. It's not like that. This is really complex and difficult.
And I think, again, to bring it back to our last section, though not completely directly, what you were saying about how IBM did these things because they were just so excited that they could actually achieve that technologically, because really it's like some nerds who are like doing something cool in isolation. Again, from that Swisher interview, she was saying, like, when she first interviewed them, when they, or the dev team, or whoever it was, the product team, when they launched Facebook Live, you know, they're just live streaming on Facebook. And they gave this huge presentation about how excited they were that people could, like, you know, do birthday parties around the world and all these things. And when someone actually just asked them point blank, what about, you know, self-harm and people, like, committing crime and murders and suicide, and, like, they had... The team even said on the record that they hadn't even thought of that.
That is astonishing.
They are so blinkered in Facebook is a thing for good, and Zuckerberg is like, it's a great thing, it connects people. But actually, they're enabling a lot of really dark things that they literally don't think about.
Yeah.
Just drinking the
They're not even ignoring it. They're so privileged in their position.
It's a self image. It's like the Elon Musk thing that. Particularly Zuckerberg views himself as a sort of saviour of humanity and he thinks that he literally thinks he cannot do things that are wrong because he is himself and he's so important.
And unfortunately what these things are all now kind of showing, or maybe that I'm worried that he is beginning to believe, is that he can screw up several times and it kind of just goes away. Because he still goes into those meetings and sees a graph with Facebook still getting money and people are still joining up. And really all he has to do is take a few hits, which he doesn't really give a shit about.
Yeah, I mean, even despite being... Fine. Yeah, I mean, despite 16 billion being you know, in theoretical a drop of his personal wealth, he's still worth a huge amount of money. So I do wonder about that, like whether this kind of... I mean, I shouldn't downplay it. It is quite major. But I wonder, is he actually going to look at that and think, you know, what does this mean? I think it's difficult because the capacity that Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook seem to have for self-reflection is just so minimal. They just don't seem to be able to step away from the situation and say, oh, wait a minute, this is actually quite complex and maybe we should do things differently. They just will say, oh, yeah, but actually we're still making things better. And if you say to them, business model is built on advertising.
That's because if they say that, then investors go, oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But it's just kind of saying, okay, actually, this is a problem that we need to look at. I don't know.
They
don't
want to do that, though.
I know.
It could cost them money to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think probably the thing to say is that they will... I imagine that they'll try and focus on getting more revenue from... things like Instagram or other... I'm sure that they will find ways to overcome this. I don't think Facebook's going to, you know...
And because it's a drop in shareholder sort of valuation, then that suggests to me that there isn't necessarily a problem at all.
Yeah.
That maybe it's just a perception thing that they've got spooked and they think, you know, they all think among themselves, you get that snowballing effect. They think, well, other people are going to devalue them, therefore I'll sell my shares.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if Facebook's share price, it goes back up to... Not that far off where it was before. I don't think it will be a huge impact.
There was a headline in The Onion today or yesterday that said, Mark Zuckerberg's net worth plunges not even close to enough.
absolutely.
And that is quite a good way to wrap it up. I will ask the question, Charlotte. Up Zuck and away or Zucks to be you?
Zucks to be you.
Tamlin?
Zuck off.
David?
I think still up Zuck and away.
Because you think he'll be fine?
I think he'll be fine. I think they should get rid of him. I know that's bizarre.
He did refuse recently difficult. On the record to fire himself.
Yeah, so. That might be difficult given that he
president instead or something.
It was
just farcical. In an interview, he was like, "If anyone should be fired because of these controversies, it should be me." And then they were like, "Will you fire yourself?" And he goes, "No." Coming up next, the company with even more money than Facebook. David Price.
Hello.
Matt Cord, editor. Before we talk about the drama, which doesn't really seem like drama after the two topics we've just discussed, Apple did some new MacBook Pros. What's new about the new MacBook Pros?
Nothing externally. They look the same on the outside, but they have all new innards.
Like the several versions of Zuckerberg they wheel out.
Exactly. This is actually quite a new thing for Apple, that they've got the Core i9 Intel processor.
That's a big core.
Well, it did. It's got two more cores than the one they had last year.
So it's a 6-core i9 for the first time in an Apple laptop.
Well, this is the interesting thing is that is a new processor. Apple doesn't normally do that. Normally they go, what processors have been knocking around for 9 months and we'll stick one of them in. But this one, I think, is like 2 months old. You probably know more about that than me.
No, you're correct.
So it's much more powerful than in the past, and it should be a bit of a powerhouse, and is not necessarily always performing in that way, as we will discuss in a moment. They've also changed the keyboard a little bit, and they said they were just trying to make it quieter. And I don't know why. I don't know why they did this. They just, we just made it quieter. And then obviously iFixit tore a MacBook to pieces, as they always do with every product. And they said, there's a little rubber membrane under each key. What's that there for? And then they said, that's to stop dust getting in there.
Yeah.
Which had been allegedly a problem with the previous generation of MacBooks, and they said, it's no problem, there's no problem. We'll just put this rubber membrane in here just for no reason.
And just before this, they'd also, because the keys have shallower travel, so if you get a bit of, literally a bit of crumb in there, your entire key can stop working.
So this is a major issue then for...
Yeah, and it has been for 2 years. And just before the release of this MacBook, they admitted that they didn't admit it was a problem. They would allow for a longer warranty on keyboards of existing products. Yeah. Then said they made the new keyboard slightly quieter, as David said. But actually, they were like, we did.
Rubber's just their answer to everything, isn't it? Do you remember ages ago?
It is for you.
when one of the iPhones had connectivity problems, and Apple gave out a bit of rubber that you could
stick
onto it.
Yeah.
Antenna gate around the iPhone 4. Yeah.
And smashed a competitor's phone on the floor during the keynote.
That's how to do a keynote.
They released these new laptops. Obviously, every tech reviewer bought one or got lent one by Apple. So what was found out pretty immediately?
Well, it wasn't quite immediately. So the initial reviews were very positive. And then I think the patient zero, as it were, was this guy called...
Dave Lee.
Dave Lee, there you go, a YouTuber. Who found out that when you test it at a high load, I think he was using Adobe Premiere, which is exactly the sort of software that people that buy MacBook Pros would use. It's very high-end, demanding software. And he found that it ran really hot, and then it started to throttle the speed, and the speed dropped as soon as it got to this certain temperature.
Yeah.
And then other people, he posted a video about that, and then other people started testing under similar conditions, and they found that theirs throttled the speed as well, although the results were very inconsistent, and some people were finding that the i9 actually ran slower than the i7, which is meant to be a weaker, slower chip. Some people were finding that it was a bit faster, but nowhere near as fast as Apple said it should be, and the whole thing was a bit of a...
Yeah, and out of context, this does sound a little bit like nerd moaning, but particularly when Apple has done this for the first time, and as David said, they've put brand new 8th generation Intel chips into new laptops. If you actually buy a Core i9 MacBook Pro and you want 32 gig of RAM and a higher sort of SSD put in, you have to do it at a point of purchase, and basically it's going to cost you over £6,000. And so if you're a pro and you spend that, and then you buy the i9, and then when you actually do just a normal render, it throttles down to the machine that you didn't buy because you didn't think it was good enough.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah, so this explains why Neil kept on going on about a hot bottom for the whole week. He's the man who's been testing the... He's been testing the... he's been testing it for us. So there's an overheating
there is,
issue, which is making...
Dave Lee, who knows what he's talking about and is a great YouTuber, he put the MacBook in a freezer and then it works properly.
Right.
And then so he, as you said, he started the snowball effect. But then Apple's immediately addressed this problem.
Yeah, they've been very quick. It took them less than a week to identify the problem, put out an apology and a supplemental update to macOS 10.13.6.
Ooh, nailed it.
Which appears to fix the problem.
A missing digital key in the firmware that impacts the thermal management system and could drive clock speeds down under heavy thermal loads.
Hmm.
which is a bit of a dropped bollock.
It is, and to put it leads me to ask:
a dropped bollock's bad. Let's look at that.
If you drop a bollock, that's definitely a bad thing. A pair of bollocks dropping, yeah. I would say, if you're 13,
it's fine. But you don't want to drop
younger
one
younger than that. Looking at Tamlin.
Shut up.
I don't know. I don't have any, so I just asked. That's why I asked.
So the weird thing here, right, is that if they're putting out a computer that they know professionals will push to its absolute limit.
Yes.
Are we really to believe that the most valuable company in the world putting out a brand new laptop didn't test it properly? Right. Are they that complacent?
Possibly, or possibly not.
I just don't buy that.
So our colleagues on Macworld US have done fantastic testing on this, and their thinking is that this reflects a declining culture of quality control at Apple over multiple years.
Yeah.
And that essentially...
Post-Steve Jobs, basically.
Yeah, well, that's how they argue. I mean, as we've already heard, there was AntennaGate even under Steve Jobs. I'm not sure that it is a wider cultural shift, but I think they have got an issue. And there's been a whole series of releases over the last year, 2 years, that have had these problems, had these bugs that should have come up, and they haven't spotted them. And it's almost as if they don't use them properly.
Yeah, that's what you'd be led to believe.
They were arguing that there should be a VP in charge of quality control, specifically devoted to that, and a whole team that would just use Apple products in a day-to-day environment. And
but they used to do that, right? So do you think, like, you know, remember when an engineer left an iPhone 4 in a bar and somebody gave it to Engadget?
Oh, maybe that's when they stopped doing
maybe.
It.
Maybe. I mean, and also, do you remember, just before the iPhone 10 came out, an engineer accidentally let his daughter do a whole YouTube video on it and he got fired. So have they just, like, are they so terrified of leaks that it's actually impacted quality control?
They seem much less worried about leaks than they were under Steve Jobs. That's when they got that reputation for hyper secrecy. And these days you get
a product came out and there was nothing wrong with it.
Yes, well, yes, that's why I think that's not necessarily the issue. But yeah, they should have spotted this, and it's not really good enough, to be honest, that they consistently make these problems, make these mistakes with new products, and it puts people off buying. And Macworld US did this poll where they asked their readers, this specific issue, the throttling problem, does that make you more nervous about buying Macs in general? Mm. And 46% said yes.
That's pretty big from a Mac community.
Bear in mind, so this is a Mac community, people who are predisposed to be favourable to Apple, and a single issue, a single controversy has noticeably reduced.
Well, totally. I think it's like they're a bit stuck because the fact that this was found out relatively easily shows that it was a problem that they should have caught. Yeah. But then also it shows, like you say, or at least implied, if you're spending this much money on a computer, what else is wrong with it?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't want to find out after I've spent £6,000.
Yeah, so you had recent MacBook Pros have had issues with the screens, they've had issues with the keyboard, and now they've got issues with the CPU.
There was the root bug where you could log in to any Mac with no password.
Yeah, it's just the list is endless. And obviously other products and other companies also have many issues, such as Samsung's phones exploding in your pocket.
Yeah, they oddly recovered from that. But Apple, the whole thing was it just works.
Exactly.
And now they don't.
They are based on trust. That's why they can charge a lot of money for their products, is because you assume they will keep you safe, they will look after you. Like when we were talking about ethical companies, I didn't want to be the guy that always brings it back to Apple, but Apple do not comply with repressive governments. When the FBI said you have to unlock this iPhone so that we can catch terrorists, which is like such a nasty play in terms of PR, they just said, well, no, we're not going to do that because we value security and privacy, and this is important as a principle. Yeah. But that thing, that trust that you have individually with a company, is going to get worn down if you keep on buying these things and they don't work. And it puts people off buying on the opening weekend. It's like a film, I suppose, way of looking at it. But I don't buy Apple products straight away if I can avoid it. I prefer to wait until the issues have been resolved. Mm.
I think a lot of people feel that way. Kind of, let's see what's going to happen. And especially, they've had that issue with updates hugely as well. Mm. Kind of like, what is this going to do? What will this do to my phone?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you wait until one of your friends has done the update and then you jump in after you've established it's not going to completely balk your device.
That's smart.
You're finally seeing nice MacBook clones with genuinely thin bezels and nice designs. And obviously they don't run on OS X or whatever the OS is called these days.
macOS.
That's it. But do you think the quality of copycat
machines from competitors is going to start eating into the Apple faithful if this sort of thing carries on.
It's hard to know whether it will cut into Apple faithful, because we're still looking at products like the iPhone X that has the occasional bug, and then like the £6,000 MacBook Pro, which people are still probably not going to want to change operating systems in a hurry if they if they can help it. But yeah, I do agree with you that in general, in the consumer market, there are tons of slightly cheaper Windows machines that are much better build quality now and reliability. And if you like Windows, then why wouldn't you spend that? And also, when I think the base MacBook now, the cheapest MacBook you can buy that isn't a MacBook Air, costs £1,250, and you can spend about maybe just over half that on a Windows if you want. Because I think, would you agree, David, that the MacBook Air, which we are we're using to record on right now, for maybe 8 years was just always the best laptop for most people that you could buy, and it's not anymore because they haven't updated it, and now they're more expensive. Products have more problems.
They have more problems, and they also don't have a drastically updated design.
No.
I think that's partly you talk about clones, but Apple has had the same design pretty much for its MacBooks for a long, long time. And of course, people are going to incorporate that design. They're going to copy it. If they came out with something that was genuinely new, like an iPhone X of MacBooks, then it would be good for multiple reasons, but it would also make the clones have a year of trying to catch up again.
Thank you. If you want to drop $6,000, maybe research first.
You can get it. You can get it for less. Or you can get the i9 for sort of $3,000-$4,000.
Yeah. You know,
if you don't get the four gigabytes SSD.
Actually, if you add the 4 terabyte SSD at point of purchase to the i7 MacBook Pro, the add-on actually costs more than the laptop.
Yeah.
It costs £2,800 to add a 4 terabyte SSD, which to be fair to Apple was actually market value, which is fucking insane. David, price Mac or yes or Mac or no?
You really put a lot of thought into that, didn't you?
Did you just do that on the spot?
Yes.
Mac, oh yes.
Still you're gonna stick with Mac.
Oh yeah, I love
Mac. Editor of Macworld. Tamlin McGee.
Mac. Yes.
Charlotte, do you like Apple?
No.
Okay, cool. Thanks for joining us for this light-hearted, bumpy ride through the Holocaust, stock prices, and expensive computers. We will be back next week as we approach episode 100. A few more to go. We will try and be timely. Thank you for being here, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Goodbye.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.